Welcome. This is the second of two lectures which serve as an introduction to the subject of studying the culture of healthcare and healthcare professionals. The two lectures are meant as an introductory unit for a full course on the culture of healthcare, covering the people who work in healthcare, the settings in which healthcare is delivered, the practices and processes of healthcare delivery, some of the professional values, beliefs, and ethics which drive that behavior, and how health information technologies interact with healthcare professionals in their work. In the first lecture, we discussed what is meant by the word culture in reference to healthcare and healthcare professionals. In this second lecture, we will discuss why this is important and how we can learn more about it. Now, the first question is, why should we learn more about the culture of healthcare and healthcare professionals? To get some insight into this question, we asked people who were trained in biomedical informatics and have been working in the field for between 1 and 10 years. First, we asked them this: what do you think is the most important thing for non-health professionals to understand about clinical practice? Here are some representative answers. One respondent said, how clinical practices operate, the bureaucratic, political, and hierarchical structures of the organization, and the way people are expected to relate to each other. Another one said, if I am designing or implementing a system, it's imperative that I spend time in every setting I can to get a feel for what each clinician does in the course of his or her day. A third said, only by understanding what the clinician experience is can you meet technology needs. Another response was, they need to understand the user, how they work, how they think, what their challenges and frustrations are, and how you can help them. Another typical response was, having an understanding of the basic roles, responsibilities, approaches, and workflows of members of the healthcare team. We also asked informatics professionals who have been working in the field for between 1 and 10 years, do you have any other comments or suggestions about teaching non-health professionals to work with health information technology in clinical settings? Some representative answers include, expose students to a variety of settings. Push students to probe more deeply when getting feedback from clinicians. Teamwork. Not just between you and clinicians, but the whole healthcare team, including administration, vendors, patients, researchers, etc. You just might be the piece that pulls or holds the whole thing together. Always shadow the intended user many times before attempting an HIT intervention. Give them as much exposure as possible to a variety of clinicians, clinical settings, to remove some of the mystery. Suggest that they volunteer, not so much on the clinical level, but staff, administration, and patient or visitor. In my field, most jobs want experience in certain applications. It was helpful to at least see how these work. So you can see that at least if you ask health informatics professionals who have been working in the field in healthcare settings such as industry and so forth, it sounds like learning more about the culture of healthcare is important to being effective in biomedical and health informatics. Okay, so if it is important that we learn more about the culture of healthcare, how can we do this? This slide suggests at least part of the answer. Get out in the field and see what the natives are doing. The photograph shows two classic anthropologists, Margaret Mead and Gregory Bateson, seated at a small table inside a hut on an island in the South Pacific. They have gone into the field to observe the natives, in this case, South Pacific Islanders, to try to understand their culture. In the photograph, the two anthropologists are using what was then the latest technology, an 8mm movie camera, an old-school typewriter, and so forth, and they are hard at work making notes about the day's observations. This classic view of anthropology is a starting point, but it needs an update. The obvious update that is needed to the image of anthropologists doing fieldwork in the South Pacific is that we are talking about observing cultures that are more modern, closer to home, and more similar to our own. The less obvious update that is needed is an update to the very concept of culture itself. This slide presents a view of culture which was present in the first introductory lecture. Culture refers to an integrated patterns of human behavior that include the language, thoughts, communications, actions, customs, beliefs, values, and institutions of racial, ethnic, religious, or social groups. That is the definition provided by the United States Department of Health and Human Services, Office of Minority Health. In the first lecture, we modified this to describe healthcare culture as the language, thought processes, styles of communication, customs, beliefs, and institutions that characterize the profession of nurses or doctors or allied health professionals, our clinic managers. And we noted that these elements of culture are learned in part through their participation in the customs, rituals, and rules of conduct, which are often not formal or explicit. But this concept of culture is no longer appropriate. The classical concept of culture was developed by expanding Western civilizations as they came into contact with physically isolated groups of people to try to understand them. This conception of culture presumes that the observer's culture is normal or normative and defines the behaviors and practices of those observed as different. It is generally taken to mean a static, closed, coherent system of meaning and action in which an individual only and always participates. It presumes that a person belongs to one culture only, that they always belong to that culture and always exhibit its features. But consider our contemporary world with global communication, transportation, and migration that connects virtually every region with every other. Culture is no longer closed. It is no longer single. It is no longer constant or static. According to Michael Agar, culture is instead relative. That is to say, any description of a given culture is grounded in the language and culture of the observer. Agar calls this languaculture. We don't have to adopt this term, but we can understand the idea that a description of a particular culture can only be created in the context of the person observing it, grounded in that person's language and culture. Another person from another culture speaking another language might well describe the observed culture in a different way. So the description of a given culture depends on the people observed and on the person observing. We don't, therefore, produce a description of a culture, but rather we produce a description of the difference between two cultures. Northwest culture of Portland or Seattle compared to the Gulf Coast culture of Louisiana or Mississippi. This is analogous to the notion of velocity in physics. The velocity of a body in motion is always relative to some reference point or other body, not absolute. An airplane has one velocity when compared to the air around it, its airspeed, and another velocity when compared to the ground. And in reality, its ground speed is different depending on whether the plane is going east or west. So culture, like velocity, is always relative. Any description of a culture can only exist in reference to some other culture, usually one's own. Another aspect of a modern concept of culture is that it is always plural and always partial. Few of us belong to a single cultural group. For any particular kind of person, group, or situation, there is usually more than one culture at play, so that no single cultural tradition or reference can define or explain behaviors or interactions. Consider a middle-aged nurse from Texas who may participate in a particular religion, whose background may include particular educational or other experiences. The behavior of this nurse is unlikely to be completely explained by any one of these cultural elements. Some behavior may be a reflection of the professional culture of nurses. Some behavior may be a reflection of a Texas upbringing. Some behavior may be a reflection of an MBA degree or experience or as an engineer or whatever. The point is, to paraphrase Michael Agar, culture is always plural and it is always partial. Think about how this might relate to understanding culture in healthcare settings, where so many different professional, organizational, and other cultures interact on a day-to-day basis. Let's turn our attention now to ethnography. Ethnography is the anthropologist's practice and description of what life is like in any local world, a specific setting in a specific society, usually one different from that of the anthropologist himself or herself. Classically, an ethnographer visits a foreign place, learns the language, and systematically describes the social patterns in a particular village, neighborhood, or network. Critical to this work is the great importance placed on understanding the native's point of view, understanding how the behaviors, practices, and language make sense to the natives themselves, as opposed to what they may mean to the outsider doing the observing. Ethnography emphasizes engagement with people and with the practices they undertake in their local worlds. To understand the culture or cultures of healthcare, we can adopt the approach of ethnographers, trying to understand the language, behaviors, and practices in terms of what these things mean to the natives, in this case, the nurses, doctors, therapists, clinic managers, and others who make up a modern, complex healthcare system. Important insights into another culture, or the difference between two cultures, are gained when we pay attention to what Agar calls rich points. Rich points are the behaviors that highlight cultural differences. Consider, for example, the language used to describe the persons we deal with, which we referred to previously. A person may be referred to by doctors as a patient, by counselors and therapists as a client, by the business office as a customer, by the medical librarian as a patron, and by the IT department as a user. These differences in language suggest differences in the assumptions about the status of individuals, their goals, their relationships, and so forth. Sometimes terms which may seem neutral in one context or from a particular cultural reference point may be viewed in a positive or negative light when taken from another cultural reference point. An example is the conventional use of the term chief complaint by physicians. To physicians, this is an entirely neutral term which refers to the symptoms or conditions that brought the patient to see the doctor, the problem which the patient would like solved. But to others, the word complaint may connote a more negative implication, that the person is a complainer or a whiner. Not long ago, a physician was doing a sabbatical in informatics and worked within the office setting of an informatics department. He brought with him the assumptions and behaviors of his profession and setting. If his pager went off, or he needed to make a phone call for some other reason, he would reach for the nearest phone, usually a phone in someone's cubicle belonging to a specific person, and make his call. For workers in this office setting, this behavior was completely unacceptable. In this setting, a telephone belongs to a given individual, and it's not okay for anyone else to walk up and use the phone without asking. But this is a rich point which can give us insight in the differences between the cultures. On a hospital ward, most of the equipment belongs to no one in particular and is available to everyone, and it is normative behavior to simply pick up the nearest phone if no one's using it and make one's call. For this physician, bringing his usual behavior, based on hospital beliefs and assumptions, into the office setting resulted in a conflict with normal beliefs and assumptions of that office setting. This is an example of a rich point, a behavior that highlights cultural differences. In this case, the assumption in the office setting that a piece of equipment belongs to or is assigned to a specific individual, compared to the assumption in a hospital setting that most pieces of equipment belong to no one in particular and are shared by all. The same difference in assumptions can occur when HIT implementations in the hospital bring with them office-based assumptions about assignment and ownership. In an office setting, computers may be assigned to specific individuals and owned by them, an assumption which may be enforced by the way in which the machine is configured for that specific individual. This assumption does not translate well into the hospital setting, where individuals move from ward to ward, from desk to desk, and from computer to computer, and all computers must essentially serve all individuals. Configurations for a specific individual simply break down. The point here is that much can be learned by chasing these rich points. Exposing ourselves to other cultures, usually through fieldwork or site visits, we notice these rich points or differences in behavior that seem to make no sense to us, given our own cultural assumptions and values. The job, then, is to chase these rich points and translate the meaning from one culture to another. Culture, then, is not a property of them or of us, but rather a translation between the two, and is never a complete translation, always partial. This applies to traditional cultural translation, such as translating from traditional healing practices to modern Western biomedicine. It can also apply to professional culture translation, such as translating from the culture of health professionals to that of IT professionals. At times, there may be resistance to the idea of achieving or studying cultural competence, whether we are talking about health professionals learning cultural competence for their dealings with patients, or we are talking about health informatics professionals learning cultural competence for their dealings with the healthcare system. In dealing with medical students who encounter the cultural competence curriculum, we sometimes encounter this resistance in statements such as, "I didn't come to medical school to learn this," or, "We have more important things to worry about." This resistance also comes from a certain degree of ethnocentrism or denial of one's own culture or cultural bias. It can come from stereotyping and oversimplifying the cultures of others, failing to recall that culture is not monolithic, but always relative, plural, and partial, as we discussed earlier. Finally, it comes from othering, that is, treating persons in another group that is different from one's own, which is taken to be normal, and then labeling, marginalizing, or excluding those in the other culture. In healthcare, we sometimes encounter these forms of resistance when we try to learn cultural competence. In health informatics, we might also encounter these same forms of resistance. The idea that we have more important things to worry about in our informatics training, the ethnocentrism or cultural bias that grounds us in our own culture, the tendency to stereotype and oversimplify members of other cultures, in this case, health professionals, and the tendency toward othering by defining people who are different, such as nurses, doctors, or therapists, and labeling, marginalizing, or excluding them. Perhaps you've seen examples of this in the organizations in which you've worked. Let's assume that you are convinced that the study of healthcare culture is important to successful development, implementation, and maintenance of health information technology for patients and clinicians. How can you learn more? Where should you look? Well, you're likely to learn more by observing the people in healthcare, the places where they work, their work processes and practices, their values and beliefs, and their interactions with technologies, including not just computer technology, but other technologies as well. Considering the people should include not only health professionals, but everyone else that participates in the healthcare process. Places where healthcare takes place are varied from modern tertiary academic medical centers, to small primary care and community clinics, to long-term care settings such as nursing homes, and of course, to the patient's own home. When studying these processes and practices, it is not only important to characterize what people do, the workflow, but also to understand why they do things in the ways that they do them. Understanding values requires not only examination of explicit, written, and spoken values, but also the values that are implicit or can be inferred from behavior, especially when conflicts arise. Finally, there is much to be learned from examining the interaction of people in the healthcare system with technologies that help them do their work. As Ed Hutchins has said, you cannot understand the task until you understand the tools. Learning more about the culture of healthcare, it is important that we keep our cultural assumptions from hindering practical understanding. Remember that modern anthropology rejects the idea of isolated societies with fixed sets of beliefs. There is no single culture of biomedicine. Rather, the culture of healthcare is the interaction and intersection of many diverse professional, organizational, and other cultures. We must avoid stereotyping, assuming that individuals always and only exhibit behaviors of a single monolithic culture, because this can get in the way of solving their problem. We can translate these ideas from cultural competency to the interaction between health information technology and health informatics and health professionals, rejecting the idea of an isolated society with a fixed set of beliefs. This can help us focus on issues rather than cultural stereotypes, whether they are stereotypes about professional culture or other. To wrap up, we can consider some examples in which field studies of the sort we've been discussing have been used in biomedical informatics. This sort of work dates back at least to early ethnographic studies of work practices, which informed the design of computer workstations, such as the work of Danielle Fachamp and the late Diana Forsythe. The American Medical Informatics Association gives an annual Diana Forsythe Award to the best studies of this type at its annual meeting. Other examples include studies of collaborative sense-making and information use in critical care and emergency care, such as those cited here by Forsythe, Ho, and Paul. Many studies of barcode medication technology have looked at its impact and side effects based on how it is actually used in the field, notably the work of Emily Patterson. Similarly, informal information sharing in critical care settings was described by Nancy Vukovic. The impact of computer order entry systems on doctor-nurse cooperation and cognition was examined by Marie-Catherine Buscau-Zafir. And patient-physician interaction when using exam room computers was studied using video ethnography by Bill Vantra and colleagues. These are just a few examples of the ways in which ethnographic approaches to the study of health professionals and their work has led to insights about the design and use of health information technology in healthcare settings. To summarize, let's enumerate some take-home points. First, effective healthcare information technology requires understanding of the healthcare culture, including the clinical settings, processes, and people. Second, a modern concept of culture is that it is always plural, always partial, and always relative, depending both on the observer and the observed. Third, rich points are behaviors or differences in behavior that give us insight into cultural differences and the why of work practices, including workarounds. Fourth, cultural competence is as important for health informatics as it is for health professionals, avoiding stereotypes, ethnocentrism, and othering. Finally, rich insights obtained from this kind of study can inform the design and evaluation of health information technology for clinical settings.